The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the program. A couple of things going on. Next hour, we are going to talk to Christian Maple. He is the father of 7-year-old Camden Maple. This is a kid up in Ohio that the school said, hey, he's riddled with ADD. He's not paying attention in class, and you got to put him on medication. And the family said, no, we don't have these problems at home. He's bored. Well, that wasn't good enough. The school called the Department of Child Protective Services, and they've taken him from the family. We're going to talk to the dad coming up in about an hour. In hour number three today, deep undercover, Jack Barsky. Anybody a fan of America, The Americans?
Yeah, I've watched some of it. It's really, really well done.
I've seen little bits and pieces. It looks really compelling.
I love it.
Really good.
Jack Barsky is one of those guys. He was an undercover.
Yeah, he lived it.
Yeah.
In that same time period, right?
In the 80s.
Yeah.
He came here as a KGB agent to work against Ronald Reagan and the American policies, exactly like the Americans. 13 years later, as soon as the wall falls down, he announces to the United States, hey, I'm here, I'm glad to be here, and tries to stay here. 13 years later, he's still going back and forth with the United States government, and he says, look, I'll give you some information. If I can become a citizen, I'll give you everything I know. What did Jack Barsky know that he held for 13 years that made the government say, oh, okay, we'll take that deal? He's with us today. He's going to talk about relations with Russia, what he thinks Putin is really up to, and his life as an undercover KGB agent when Reagan was president. That's in hour three.
Awesome.
But we begin today with the sixth flip-flop day of the president of the United States. And don't get me wrong, some of these I like. Some of these made him a better president in my eyes. Six flip-flops in one day, and they're not small. We begin there right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
We have about six shows we're going to try to shoehorn into this show today. I have something great from Kevin Williamson, too, from National Review. He wrote this great thing, United Airlines is why people hate capitalism. And it is a great observation. And I also want to tie that to something that I want to teach, that you are a science denier. A science denier if you don't believe in capitalism. And I will make a good case. If you believe that for me to get rich, I have to take it from somebody else. If being rich, your belief is, hurts other people, you're a science denier. And I'll prove it to you that you are living as an unevolved human being. And we'll give that to you coming up in just a second. So yesterday, Donald Trump took six campaign positions and reversed them. And none of them are small. The one that probably was the most obvious to people was NATO. He said it was obsolete. It's no longer obsolete.
That's a very very Trump way to change his mind. Notice he's not changing his mind. He is saying it was obsolete. It is no longer obsolete.
He said
that is not an inconsistent position if you have come in and magically changed the organization.
He said, I complained a long time ago about that they don't fight terrorism, and now they do fight terrorism.
Now, of course, they had been fighting terrorism the entire time.
They were with us fighting terrorism.
Right. But however, we'll say, I think all of us maybe agree that this is a positive flip-flop.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was
you
a terrible
just
position.
Walk away from NATO.
It's a bad position he took during the campaign. This is a good change.
Yeah. I'm all in for NATO. So anybody, the Steve Bannons of the world are losing their mind today. Because, I mean, he flip-flopped on a lot of stuff. Here's one that didn't get as much attention with the mainstream of America. This is enormous. China, the number one currency manipulator. How many times did we hear that?
Oh, but they're not manipulating their currency.
Well,
that's
no.
The new position.
He said they were manipulating, but now says they're not manipulating their currency.
Yeah, he said he would call them a currency manipulator on day one of his presidency. And then now he said they're not.
Okay. Well, but they are, Donald. So are we. I mean, we are actually the world's largest currency manipulator. Printing $8 trillion is manipulating our currency. And we are the largest currency manipulators in the world. China is a close second. But to say that they're not manipulating their currency...
It depends on your definition of this, of course. But
printing $8 trillion?
Right. I mean, like, are they manipulating their currency in normal human speak? Yes. There's a specific accusation he's making there when they call it currency manipulation. Uh-huh. And by the way, it's one I wish China would start doing again, because what it does is make all of our products cheaper.
Right.
Because if people come to me all the time, they're like, oh, well, you know, currency manipulation is really bad, and then China should stop doing it. Why is China doing it? The accusation is they're doing this to keep the jobs of manufacturing jobs and lowering the price of their exports, right?
Yes, right.
So that other,
and they are.
And they are. And they were really until fairly recently.
Fairly recently.
So they haven't really done it in a little while, but still. But the idea is, would you support a candidate who did what they are doing? Right. If it's such a smart policy to manipulate your currency to lower the price of exports, would you support a candidate who said, what I'm going to do is subsidize products so that other countries can buy them? I'm going to lower the price of our products. I'm going to subsidize the purchase of products by other countries of our materials. Would you support that policy for any president that ran in this country?
Nobody would. I wouldn't.
Nobody would. So I actually want China to start manipulating their currency again, because all it does is they're paying for your products. That is a terrible policy, and if they want to continue to do it, good.
Next was Janet Yellen. Janet Yellen, of course, she's political, and she's only doing what Obama wants her to do. She should be ashamed of herself.
And she's going to be out.
Yesterday, I like her. I respect her.
She's back in.
I like the low interest rate policy. I just have to be honest with you. She's not going anywhere. This is all yesterday, by the way.
That one is a... So is that a good one? Because so far, I think the first two, I would say, are good. Because the currency manipulation, beyond the actual truth of it, is a sign to say he's not launching a trade war with China,
yes,
which I think is a positive.
I think is a good thing.
So those two, I think, are... I think he's two for two, positive flip-flops.
But remember, we are now out of step with most of his voting base, because they knew that they wanted a trade war, because he said the reason we're getting screwed by China.
Yeah.
We're getting screwed by them. They're manipulating their currency, which they are, and they are making their goods cheaper, which they are, and it's all unfair, and we're out of balance, and we can't live like this. I'm going to bring the jobs back. Well, now he's just said the cause for the jobs being lost to China isn't happening. And so he's not going to put up any barriers for that. So if you are a Trump supporter and you believed him that that was the problem and his cure was right,
then you don't like this flip-flop.
You don't like this flip-flop.
What I would say to those people is,
Get on board.
Get
on the Trump train.
Get behind him.
Elections have consequences.
It was a binary choice, and this is who the president
would it be
is.
Better to
this
have Hillary?
Not,
no.
This is not helpful.
Right, thank you.
No.
This is not helpful.
Get behind him like we are.
Stop it. That's not helpful. That is not.
We just said we agreed with both of those flip-flops.
Now
people like Alex Jones are opposing him.
That's wrong.
Get on the train.
Okay, I'm not talking about Alex Jones. I'm talking about the actual people who are hurting financially. And they were desperate for someone to help them.
Yeah.
He convinced them that this was the solution, and they believed him, and they may still believe that that is the solution, and they've just been sold out again. That's a bitter pill to swallow.
Get over it.
Stop it.
No, get over it.
I'm
the man's president of the United
serious.
States. Get behind him.
Stop. Stop. A lot of those people listen to us and are trying to make their way through. I've just been sold down the river. That's not a happy place.
It isn't. But it just shows that obviously principles and policies are more important than personalities. You can't, if you put your faith in man, you're going to be let down.
When we don't know what the guiding principle that there is no overarching philosophy. See, the problem is, well, he's going to surround himself with good people. Well, yes, if you thought the good people, which half of his voters did, thought that the good people were the Breitbart Bannons of the world, they're gone. If you thought that it was the Paul Manaforts of the world, they're gone. If you think it is, the conservatives, the rebels that were going to take over the GOP position, they're gone. If you think it was the GOP over the Democrats, the GOP is about to be gone, and you're about to get all Democratic advisors. He's moving towards that direction. I mean, it's and the reason is there's no overarching philosophy except I want to win.
Yeah, but Trump.
Okay, that's a good point. That's a nice point to bring up right now.
We really have to get past this.
My honest opinion is what I said earlier is that, look, these are good changes. If the argument is, we were concerned of some of the stuff that he was saying in the campaign, and the fact that he's backing off of those positions that would be damaging is positive.
So here's my real concern. Things like things like Bannon. There was nobody that warned against Bannon more than me. Would you agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was the chief guy. And in fact, I had a lot of people around me saying, stop, don't bring it about Bannon. He's a dangerous guy. So there's nobody that was more concerned about Bannon. I am concerned about the vacuum that he will now leave.
Mm-hmm.
Who replaces him there? Because there's no overarching philosophy. I'm glad he's gone, but what does it mean for the future? I don't know. And what is Bannon going to do? Is Bannon going to go back to Breitbart and turn against Trump?
Well, we should mention Bannon's not completely gone.
He's not.
He's lost a lot of influence, obviously.
And there's a lot of reports saying he may be gone.
He might be on his way out, but he's not gone yet.
Yesterday, Donald Trump called him just another guy.
Yeah, he had already beaten all the governors and senators.
No. This is a new one. Where I have to find it. This is a new thing that he said yesterday. That he said, I don't have it in front of me. That Bannon is he's no different than everybody
else. There's no
question he's
demeaning his role. There's no.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, he's just another guy in a pool of voices.
Yeah.
Where before he was the chief strategist, now he's just another guy. He is on his way out. How does that end? What does that mean? Does that mean that Breitbart continues to go alt-right, hard alt-right, and now torpedoes this president and tears us apart even more? I don't know. Also, he reversed in the same interview, he reversed his position on the Export-Import Bank. Most people don't know what that is, but that's a really bad thing. If you're a free market person, you don't want the Export-Import Bank. Trump
called it unnecessary during the campaign.
Yeah, and said it was horrible. it's now fine and he likes it and it does
helps a lot of companies.
Yeah, quote, does a lot of good. I don't know. They may be doing free mammogram screenings at the Export-Import Bank.
Yes, yep. Free cancer screenings and condoms.
Right.
So
a lot of good for women. But Export-Import is one. I would say that's a bad flip-flop for me. I liked his opinion during the campaign on that. And that is probably a Bannon-influenced position. It seems like Trump would be for the Export-Import Bank, judging by his history.
It's cronyism.
And now he's come to that position. So that one I think is bad. But overall, so far, I think, what is he, 2 for 3? 3 for 4? I mean, the Yellen one, I'm kind of indifferent on.
2 for 4.
The Yellen one, like, I don't have any huge problem with Yellen as a Fed chief. She's, not my favorite.
Our problem is with the Fed, period.
The Fed, period. And so if he would be replacing Yellen one with someone else, and I don't know who that would be. So unless you had that information, it's hard to judge that one.
Unless you're replacing him with somebody from the Dallas Fed, it doesn't make a difference.
Or St. Louis, maybe.
Yeah.
But still, yeah, you're right. I don't know that there's a huge thing there. But, I mean, that's not terrible. It's not a terrible day.
No.
I mean, the bottom line is...
And, you know what? I'm going to take a quick break, and then I'm going to come back and tell you what happened with China yesterday. We may be seeing a repeat of Richard Nixon in the 1970s with China, which worked out really well. It's a big weekend for North Korea, and we will probably know, if North Korea isn't lying, we will probably know by Monday whether or not the United States and China have turned over a new leaf.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Sign up for the newsletter and get all the info you need to know at glennbeck.com. Mercury.
We're not finished with the reversals. And if you were somebody who believed Donald Trump was going to do some amazing things, it's got to be a hard, hard day for you.
Although some of them, like we're saying, are good things.
Yeah, but not if you believed he was going to, he took a strong stand against China and saying that's the reason why our jobs. And,
and
in some ways, he's right. His solution was not right, but at least he was saying the truth about it. His solution was wrong. When it comes to a hiring
freeze.
And
wasn't that how he was going to bring jobs back?
Yes. And so what's your plan now?
Yeah.
It was that and tax cuts. He's delayed tax cuts now.
Yes, he has.
He also,
that was in one of the flip-flops.
Right. He also was going to shrink the size of government. And the first thing he was going to do was freeze all hiring at the federal level, which he did.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, they reversed that and said, we're lifting the hiring freeze for the federal government. I mean, if you're somebody who believed that he was going to be able to do it, no matter why, it is clear that he has been co-opted, or this is who he really is, or whatever. I don't know what it is.
Like George Bush said to you years ago, it doesn't really matter who's in the presidency. They have to do about the same things.
George Bush told me in the Oval Office, and he pointed to the desk, whoever sits behind that desk, don't worry. They will find when they get here that their hands are pretty tied, and they will have to do they'll have to continue pretty much the same policies.
Because of the complexities of the world, though, there's only a certain amount of latitude you really have to
that's, I believe
done.
That's the lie. I mean, look, as a guy who has tried to keep the engine running, when there's a crash, Great Depression, you can change everything. You can change currency, you can change everything. But as long as there's not a crash, you got to keep the engine running.
Yeah.
You know, I'm doing this with my own company right now. Changing the engine while going 70 miles an hour is almost impossible. It requires, a president has more latitude after a crash, which... Warning. Warning. We have a lot to talk to you about, including capitalism itself. Next.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Boy, at glennbeck.com, there is a great article from Kevin Williamson. United is why people hate capitalism. But it's the experts answerable to the public who deserve our scorn. Capitalism is unpopular for four reasons. Banks, health insurance companies, cable providers, and airlines. What do they all have in common? Should be easy. Cable TV, banks, health insurance companies, and airlines.
Highly regulated.
Right? Probably the most regulated industry, other than what?
Well, banking is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But other than, I was going to say transportation, but really that's airlines.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other.
Anything else.
Energy, maybe.
Most definitely.
Energy. And again, how many of us like our energy companies? How many of us don't feel screwed by the energy company? How many of us don't want Nest in our house, or we don't want the smart meters in our house because we don't trust the energy? Mm-hmm. Okay? But you do trust Nest. You just don't trust a smart meter. All of them have one thing in common, and that is regulations. He makes this great point that it's not because of deregulation that these companies suck so much. It's because you can't do anything about it. You can't do anything about it.
That's what's
frustrating,
right?
Why did United Airlines, we talked about this the other day. Why did United Airlines not just say, okay, $1,500. Does anyone have $1,800?
There's a cap.
There's
imposed by the government.
Yes. Why would the federal government say, you can't offer passengers more than $1,350. Why? What is the purpose for that?
What business is it of theirs?
Exactly right. Mm-hmm. And so we all say, I hate the airline because they should have just offered more. They couldn't. They couldn't offer more. So the free market breaks down, which makes you hate them. And when you say, well, I can build a better cable company. I can build a better cable station. No, you can't. Trust me, we tried with Blaze. You cannot, unless you get in bed with the cable company, mm-hmm. the one you're trying mm-hmm. to stop. You can't do it. That's why people hate it. Great article, glenbeck.com, from Kevin Williamson. United is why people hate capitalism. Just a great, great story. Now, let me share something that I found from Homo Deus. This is the book I've been reading. This author is going to be on with us in a few weeks. I don't think I agree with him on the majority of things, especially when it comes to God. However, this is a book about how man is becoming God.
Does he admit that he's atheist?
No, I don't. Not so far. I'm only about three quarters of the way through this. It's a really, it's a pretty dense book, and it's about science. And how man is right now, worshiping humanism, that humanism is our religion. And that's not going to be strong enough with science. There has to be some sort of moral regulator on science. And science and religion should work together. Now, he doesn't believe, I don't think he believes in God. He's just saying it's got to be something. There's got to be some point of ethics. And he's talking about the kinds of things that are being done in science right now. But I'm to the point in the book to where he says, look, science is really, really good. And it's science coupled with capitalism that has changed the natural order. And anyone who doesn't understand that, you're really, now this is not, these are my words, you're not evolved. You are a Neanderthal. You have not evolved into a modern man. He says capitalism goes against everything in nature. It is a complete unknown to the natural man. And here's why. If you have a valley of bunny rabbits, there's certain number of blades of grass that can grow in that valley. And that valley will only support, let's say, 100 bunny rabbits. Well, those 100 bunny rabbits now also support the 10 fox that live around that valley. And in the balance of nature, the 10 bunny rabbits or the 100 bunny rabbits eat the grass. when there are, have more bunny rabbits, they will, they'll starve to death, and it will reduce the bunny rabbit population because there's no more grass. If the bunny rabbits expand, they can go hop off to another field, but there's no expanding the grass. If the fox comes down, the fox come down and they eat a bunny rabbit. If one fox just happens to have a good day or is greedy, he might eat three. But if that fox eats three bunny rabbits, that means another fox didn't eat. And so again, the balance of nature. And at no point does anybody at the end of the year, the fox don't get together and say, all right, I think if I continue to eat these bunny rabbits next year, I'm going to have a 3% expansion of my bunny rabbit intake. There's no growth. The growth in that is 0%. Okay? That's nature. In everything, if I'm going to eat a bunny rabbit, I'm literally taking that bunny rabbit out of the mouth of another fox. Sound familiar? Sound like the people who are on television talking about capitalism and how evil it is?
Income inequality.
You have it, and therefore I do not.
Yeah.
Let me go on. The only time that this is broken in the natural world is with the vampire bats. Vampire bats have a blood bank, in a way. Vampire bats all live in a cave together, and they go and they fly out at night, and they, you know, they stick their fangs, or they make a little incision, and they stick their fangs in, and they suck the blood out of an animal. Then they all fly back into the cave when the sun starts to come up. Some of the bats didn't eat. Nature has made these vampire bats in a very weird way. The vampire bat that didn't eat can go to a vampire bat that did eat and say, I want to suck your blood. I need some blood. I'm hungry. The other vampire bat, I don't know how they do it, the other vampire bat then gives that vampire, that other vampire bat, you know, like 10 milliliters of blood, whatever it is, and gives them blood so they're sustained so they can go and fly out tomorrow. Now, they're also equipped with an extraordinary memory. The bat that came to them to ask for the blood, when the bat that gave that blood, when he flies out and he didn't get any food, he goes back to the same bat and says, I need blood. The other bat gives 10 milliliters back. Not 11, not 9, 10. So it's like a bank, except our banks charge interest. It's
really weird.
Isn't that weird? Okay.
Is that, I mean, do we know, how do we know that?
I don't know. Somebody who studies bats. So there's 0% interest, but that also means there's 0% growth. Because no bat is going, if you give me more blood, I'll go out and find more prey, and I'll give you 11 milliliters back. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So 0% growth, but here at least, if you don't eat, somebody gives it to you.
Wow.
Last one on man. In the old days, let's take it back to medieval times. In the old days, there was a plague. And put yourself in medieval times. There is a plague. It comes every 5 years, and it wipes everybody out. And you've lived through five of them. And you're like, oh, Jesus, plague. There's got to be somebody that can do something. Well, nobody thought that back then. And here's why. If you thought to yourself, I think I can solve this plague thing. If you were a farmer, you couldn't leave your farm. If you were just an entrepreneur, you couldn't leave your farm and say, hey, I've got an idea. I'm going to go hire a bunch of people to go track the source of this outbreak, to then, you know, come back to my lab and mix different ingredients and try them out in different trials and everything else, because you had to feed yourself. You were a farmer. You couldn't go to the baker and the blacksmith and the other farmers and say, hey, guys, give me money, fund this, and I'm going to put the team together to go try to figure out how to solve this plague. No, I'm barely making it. I have to pay for what I have. Nobody had ever seen a patent. Nobody had ever seen a stock market. It didn't work that way. And more importantly, there was zero growth for hundreds of years. Why? Because of the lord of the manor or the king. The only growth that happened for most of mankind until America. How did growth happen?
The rich got richer.
How?
Because the people had to give to the
lord. The king or the lord would say, I'm now taking 10% of your wheat.
Yeah.
Well, they couldn't come up with, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. I can only, back to the bunny rabbits, I can only grow so much wheat on this land. So I can't get ahead. He can, either by taxing the people, thus comes the idea, if you take it from me, if you're rich, it's because you've taken it from me. Because for thousands of years, that's the only way it worked. I couldn't solve a problem because I couldn't get the money. And if I did solve the problem, the king would take that as his idea. He'd make the money and I'd be back farming. So the only way to grow was either take it from the peasants or war. That's old think. Let me show you the new world. The new world, remember the peasants, all of them dying with plagues? Nobody could do anything? Now, when Ebola hit Dallas last time, do you remember that? Mm-hmm. When Ebola hit Dallas, there's two pharmaceutical companies that are working on cures for Ebola. The two companies, the day it hit Texas, went up 50 and 90% in their stock. Hmm. People don't have to go door to door and say, hey, can you help me? I'm working. No. We now know that somebody, if there's a problem, somebody out there is working on it. And not only are they working on it, and so they will cure the ills of today, I can get rich with them. And nobody has to come and take it from me. I can voluntarily get involved, and I can be rich because I was part of it. Didn't happen for the butcher and the baker and the blacksmith. So here's what's required. A belief in the future. An understanding that we are not living in the dark ages and we're not bunny rabbits living in a valley of grass. That's old thinking. That's non-evolutionary thinking. Believe there is a future and it's going to get better. Believe in one another. Believe that new ideas that expand the pie are right around the corner, which requires you to believe that my having a piece of pie, it can be the biggest piece of pie ever because I'm not a king. And anybody who wants to be a king, any corporation that is lobbying for the king to take more money from you so they can get richer is wrong. The Constitution says there's a bigger pie. And if you don't believe any of this, then you are a science denier. You are a denier of economic science and a history denier. What happened? How is it we had nothing but candlesticks? How is it we went from candlesticks and fires, and in 100 years we had telephones, cars, and in 150 years we had space travel and computers? How's that possible? Because economic science has evolved, but we haven't. Many of our own friends and family have not evolved from the Valley of the Bunny Rabbit or from the medieval kingdom.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BACK.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Christian Maple is a name that I hope you hear, especially if you live in Ohio. Yeah, if you have kids, we are once again facing an out-of-control Child Protective Services in Ohio this time. unbelievable story of the state just coming in and ripping this kid out of a house because, well, his parents won't put him on ADD medication and the school says he needs it. Crazy. Next.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Are your children your children? Do they belong to you or do they belong to the state? Who makes the decision? Used to be really easy to answer that question. It's no longer easy. We have another out of control child protective service case that, if it is what it seems to be on the surface, another outrage of the state coming in and breaking up a family thinking that they know better. We have the parents. It's CPS versus Camden Maple in Ohio. We go there right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You feel small and insignificant, don't. I've got something that will actually, you can sink your teeth into and make a big difference. If you're a parent, so you know, government agencies in school, they know what's best for your children. A lot of parents are under the illusion that they know how to handle their families and make their own decisions. But father doesn't know best anymore. Apparently, the state knows best, at least in Ohio. In Lebanon, Ohio, a government agency, ironically named Child Protective Services, has removed a 7-year-old boy from his family and his home. The boy's name is Camden Maple. Camden is what you would expect from a 7-year-old boy. His parents, dad, Christian, stepmom, Katie, describe him as rambunctious, intelligent, and creative. The administrators at Camden School describe him differently. They say he has ADHD and requires a mental health examination. In February, Camden was called into the principal's office for disrupting class. According to his stepmom, Camden told the school counselor, quote, he was upset because he felt that he was bad and wanted to erase himself from the earth. The counselor asked Camden how he would do that. He said he would stab himself in the eye with a knife, end quote. Camden's dad, Christian, immediately came to the school, picked Camden up. Christian and Katie did exactly what I would have done with my kid. I would have sat down with him, had a long discussion about his behavior, evaluated him myself. If we had any doubt, we would go to a doctor. Camden said, no, I don't want to hurt myself. I was just upset. And quite honestly, I was just trying to get a rise out of the counselor. They dealt with it as a family. They believe they can handle the situation, and they moved on, but the story was just getting started. The next day, Maples got a call from the school. The school was following up on their suggestion that Camden be taken to the hospital for a mental health examination. Maples were like, no, we handled it. It's okay. We got it. Matter was closed. No. The school refused to let go. Thanks, likely, to some protocol handed down from some genius progressive bureaucrat that knows better. They had already badgered the Maples for a very long time about getting Camden diagnosed with ADHD and get him on some medication. The parents didn't want to do that. Now the school wanted to know what was said during the parents' discussion with Camden. The Maples said, that's a private family matter. We dealt with it, and that's the end of it. Well, the idea that a parent knows what's best for their kid does not sit well with people in school now. That's ludicrous. The Maples say Camden made very good grades, finishes his classwork before most of his classroom, gets bored, and yes, he does act out. He's bored, just like millions of other 7-year-olds around the country. Instead of medicating him, what do you say? Why don't we find something else he can do? The school didn't like the fact that Maples were ignoring their ADHD and mental health recommendations, and so they called CPS. They accused the family of neglect. Now CPS was involved, and they called the Maples and said they wanted to investigate, visit the home. Christian, the dad, said, no, I don't think so. And by the way, I think I have some Fourth Amendment rights here. 2 weeks later, they received another phone call saying, there's an emergency shelter care court hearing that you have to be at. After the hearing, CPS arrived at the home with police officers and took the 7-year-old boy into custody. The case is still unresolved, and Camden has been separated from his family for well over a month. All of this because mom and dad and the stepmom say, we know our son better than the school. We have Christian and Katie Maple on the phone with us now. Hi, guys. How are you?
Hi. We're great.
Good. Christian, do I have any part of the story wrong?
No, not that. He was actually, on a good note, returned to us last night by the court.
Wow.
By a court?
Yes, the court ordered him.
Wow.
He returned home.
That's great.
It's really great, but it's still not over. They still want to find him, have him found dependent by the court so they can justify all of their actions that led up to this.
Wait, what do you mean find him dependent? What does that mean?
Well, it's a different category by the Ohio statute that not meaning neglect or abuse, but a dependent child. They are trying to say who lacks adequate parental care by reason of mental or physical condition of the parents, guardian or custodian.
So tell me when. Let's go back. Tell me when you found out that he said he was going to stab himself with the eye. Tell me about, if you don't mind. Tell me about that conversation. Tell me what happened.
Like I said, the school called me, notified me that he said that. He never, like what they are alleging, he never came up with that plan on his own. He was prompted to say that.
How do you mean?
The counselor that he saw him at the school was asking him leading questions. She asked him deliberately, when he said that he wanted to erase himself because he was bad, she said, well, how would you do that? Instead of like getting to the root issue of why he felt bad, she prompted him to divulge a plan, which he didn't come up with on his own. Like, he did not volunteer that information.
Okay. So he didn't walk in. What you're saying is he didn't walk in and say, I just want to stab myself in the eye. He said, I just want to erase myself. And she said, well, if you were going to do that, how would you do that? Well, yeah, exactly. I would stab myself in the eye. So he hadn't made a plan, which is a sign of real suicide. She was asking him for a plan.
Yes.
Got it. Go ahead.
So then the school called me, and to note the seriousness of the situation, before I even got off the phone with the school, I was already in my car on the way to the school. I was there within 5 minutes. Told the school that, after they made their recommendations, that at first we were going to come home and have a long conversation, me, my wife, and my son. And then based on that conversation, we would determine if more action was necessary, which they completely denied. And they called CPS that same day before I even had time to respond to the situation, before they knew anything.
How is it that CPS functions this way, without due process, without having a trial, without
because somebody has to
chance?
Because somebody has to do something. That's why.
But it's unconstitutional.
No, I know. But
you
somebody's got to do something.
Out of homes.
Somebody's got to do something.
if there's proof of abuse, I that may be the case. But there wasn't. There wasn't abuse, right? And were they even alleging that you guys were physically or mentally abusing him?
No, but the school had priorly, before all this incident, they'd called four times alleging two cases of abuse, and the CPS didn't even investigate because it was unfounded.
Wow.
They wait. What did they accuse on abuse, and why would they do that?
The school? I'm not exactly sure. I just know that they called twice to report physical abuse by me done to my son.
How did you respond to that?
Well, obviously I was upset, but I didn't even know about that until after this last actual investigation by CPS was opened.
Wow. Were you able to track down why that they believe that? Did they think, you know, he got bruised playing and they thought it was you? Or do you have any idea where that came from?
Well, I know the school called and alleged that. I don't know why they think that.
Okay.
That was never.
And the CPS said we just didn't investigate.
Yeah, they said that it was unfounded and there was no reason to even open investigate.
And were they upset at you because you wouldn't put your son on ADD medication? And why wouldn't you put your son on ADD medication?
Yes, the school has been pushing for the ADD medication for a long time.
Sure.
It's brought up every time we have a meeting with the school.
Sure.
I don't, because that's going to stifle his creativity, and I don't want to medicate my son because he's an average 7-year-old boy that is creative.
Amen.
That's nothing wrong with my son. That's something wrong with the curriculum and the school being able to handle a little boy.
You're exactly right on that one. I'm so glad to hear you answer that way. Why are we letting the system say, I don't need to change the system to adapt to different kids? Instead, I'm going to medicate kids and claim the system is okay. It is absolute craziness what we allow. Okay, so go ahead.
No, I was just agreeing with you. It completely is.
So what do you do for a living?
Well, I was until recently, I was a welding supervisor. I've taken a long leave of absence because we just had our sixth child and right before Christmas, and I am staying at home to take care of her and our other younger daughter.
And what does this cost you? How has this affected the family?
Emotionally, what it's cost us is I can't even put like any kind of amount on it. I mean,
I don't mean money wise. I mean, what does this cost you? What's the payment been like? I mean, are your friends staying by you? Do people look at you differently? Like, oh my gosh, there goes that family. There's something wrong with them.
No, for the most part, a lot of my friends are behind me. I haven't had any of my friends change any of their attitude because they know me. And they know that this is all ridiculous and completely false.
Christian, have you mixed it up with the school at all over anything else? Like, are they going to come out and say that you're a troublemaker or that you're one of these parents that's always complaining about everything? Is there any other reason that this would happen?
I did have a dispute with the school because, like I said, after our baby daughter was born just recently, I tried to get our bus stop moved because of a kindergartner, and I had to physically be out there to pick him up from the bus stop. I tried to have them move it two houses down the street so I could see from our house when the bus was there and go out, because I did not want to wait out there with my infant.
Right.
And they said absolutely not, and they would not change a stop. So, I mean, we had a disagreement over that, but
what a bad parent. What a bad parent you are. Holy cow. Don't want to be standing out in the freezing cold in Ohio in the winter with your newborn. Holy cow. What will they think of next? All right. So yesterday, the court ruled in your favor, and he's back home. How is he?
He's really excited and happy to be home. Very. He wasn't sleeping well before, and he slept like a log last night. So, and he's right now, I know he's just really, really happy.
Do you, how are you affording the financial hit with the attorneys? I got to believe you're taking on the state. That's not cheap. Do you have people volunteering their time? Are you paying for it? How is that working?
Both. We're mostly paying for it out of pocket, but just barely making it. I have help from my parents who have loaned us money, but it's taking its toll.
I wish you the best, and we're going to follow this. When is the next court date?
The next court date is the education hearing on the 17th of May.
And what's that going to decide?
That is CPS and the prosecutor's office wanting him to be declared dependent so they can justify all their actions from the moment this started.
If somebody wants to get a hold of, there's got to be a great attorney, and I know some attorneys who helped the Palantirs. You remember the story out of Boston,
yeah,
Justina? Who was that? That was a friend of ours.
Yeah.
See if we can find out. We might, if we're going to hold on to your number. Is there a public way anybody can get a hold of you?
There's a GoFundMe page, right?
There is a GoFundMe page.
Yes.
What is it?
My wife set that up, so I'll let her answer to that.
Okay.
I don't want to misspeak or say something.
That's all right. That's all right. Is it Katie? Is Katie there?
Yeah.
Hi, Katie.
The link is just help us get our son home. I'm assuming you can search it.
Yeah, if you actually search as we were talking here, if you search for GoFundMe and Christian Maple, you'll get a link to it. And we'll also tweet it out from all of our accounts and everything so people can get to it easily. At World of Stew or at Glenn Beck, we'll get it all out there.
How are you holding up?
All right. It's taken its toll. I've had to take a lot of days off work.
What do you do for a living, Katie?
I'm a mail carrier.
A mail carrier. Six kids, a father who's staying home. Boy, the GoFundMe page might be very well needed. Katie, best of luck. Christian, thank you very much. And we will continue to watch this. If you're anywhere in Ohio or you care about parental rights, this case has got to be solved the right way. You can find more about it later on today. We'll post some things at glennbeck.com and on Facebook and on our Twitter as well.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
I mean, I have to tell you.
Really interesting.
It's a really interesting story, the story in Ohio. Because you could look at that story and say, okay, now wait a minute. There was a couple of other charges there, but they didn't follow those up. They didn't find that there was any reason to follow those up.
Yeah, we're pulling them out of the file on you, though.
Right.
We're reminding everybody that we had these.
And so, you know, what was that about? You could look at that and say, okay, well, now, wait a minute. There might be more going on. Or you could also look at this as, okay, so mom's a mail carrier, dad's a welder, and they have six children. You know, anybody who has six children, they can't afford those children. And six children. I mean, you got to be crazy if you have six children. And if at all they think differently, you know, if they're people who, I mean, you know, in the story, he quoted his Fourth Amendment rights. If you now are a guy who's quoting the Constitution, right. You have six children, mom's a mail carrier, you're staying at home with them. I mean, are you one of those fundamentalist weirdos?
Right. And that's not basing that on anything real. It's just that.
No, that's just the way some people might think.
Right, exactly.
And especially if you're in a very progressive school and you are like, no, I don't want. I mean, can you imagine what schools think of me?
I know what I think of you and I work with you.
Right. Yeah, I've gone to all these schools to interview these schools and I talk to all of the teachers and I talk to the history teachers and I'm like, okay, that's not accurate. What? That's not accurate. Can you imagine what they might think? Mm-hmm. You think that, you know, you are on the wrong side even politically, and then you've got a bunch of kids, you're all of a sudden a weirdo. And parents have to have control of their home. Mm-hmm. It's my child, not the village child.
Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Misdirected U.S. airstrike kills 18 Allied forces. Breaking news. Welcome to the program. I am so excited for the guests that we have coming up at the top of the hour. Deep cover. Under deep cover, Jack Barsky. He is in studio with us. Going to do an hour with him here and then an hour show with the audience this afternoon at 5 on The Blaze. His secret life as a KGB spy in the 1980s in America. I want to know what he knows about Putin. He was KGB when Putin was KGB. What should we know about Putin? What's happening with Putin in Syria, in his opinion? What was it like to be, if you like the TV show Americans, which I love, if you like the show Americans, this guy is the real, this is the guy. He was here undercover posing as an American, I think working in the Pan Am building in New York, as an American, but he was KGB Russian. Fascinating life, fascinating story. The book is Deep Undercover, Jack Barsky. He joins us in just a few minutes. I also want to talk a little bit about what's happening in North Korea if I have time this hour. But I want to wrap up our last conversation in Lebanon, Ohio, where you have Camden, a 7-year-old kid, taken by CPS, Child Protective Services, because the parents would not do a medical evaluation to see if he was, suicidal. If you just heard the story a few minutes ago, you judge for yourself. I'd love to hear your opinion on this. I really, Stu has been saying, what's the motivation of the school? What's the motivation of school? I remember when Pat's eldest son, Caden, in 1991, Pat?
Yeah.
Yeah, 91, 92?
90.
90? 90. We lived in Baltimore. Now, this is before the out-of-control state. And we lived in Baltimore, and his son is riddled with ADHD. I mean, riddled. And now, I hope someday for you to have a son just like you came to pass, because his son is just like this too. And I mean, just go, 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 go. A disruption to the class. And the school came to Pat and said, you've got to medicate him.
You got to put him on Ritalin.
And he's like, no, not going to. And it went back and forth, and finally they said, well, he's just going to sit in the nurse's office all day because he's too disruptive for class. So they took him out of school and homeschooled. Mm-hmm. Now, that's 1990. Today, they're not going to do that. If your son or daughter is disrupting class and the teacher can't handle it, they need you to medicate because they can't handle the class. And if you're saying no, the kid is clearly in need of medication. No, he's needing medication in your school, in your class. But I'm not medicating my son. Same thing Pat said. Same thing mm-hmm. I said. I've been on ADD medication. I've taken it. I would never give that to a kid. Never. You have to know yourself so well to know what parts of your personality you want to control or accentuate. It's really introspective stuff. And if you don't, you're just dead inside.
And that should be up to, obviously, the parent. And
yes.
The point is, if you as a parent said, I would never give it to my kids, then you should probably not give it to your kids.
Right.
Have another parent says they do want to give it to their kids because they think it works. They should probably be able to do that because they're the parent.
Right.
Right.
And the school, if I'm paying for it, give me my money back so I can go to another school that will adapt to my kid. Or you have to adapt to kids in a way to where maybe there's a special class for all kids at ADD, but you have developed a way to attract the attention of those kids. Better than medicating my kid? No. This part of this comes from, because ADD kids, a lot of times, the parents will say they're bored. And it's true. Mm-hmm. They're bored because they're not used to sit. A boy is not used to sitting at a desk for 8 hours a day. That's unnatural. Two, because we do everything by age now, some kids are way ahead. Some kids are way behind. They have to play to the middle. It shouldn't be done by age. We should go back to what we did before the progressives got involved. It's not done by age. It's done by how are you doing? How are you handling? But we've stigmatized anybody who sticks out one way or another. No. No. Our kids, you know, the founding fathers at their time, kids went to college. Those who could went to college at 13. Well, it was different. Yeah. You go ahead and take the eighth grade test from 150 years ago. You can't pass it.
No way.
Sure.
I can't pass it. Yeah. I can't even get past like question five. There's 100 questions and I really can do maybe five of them. It was an eighth grade test 150 years ago. Are you kidding me? It is so complex. So don't tell me that our kids are dummies and we have to dumb down. No, that's what we're expecting. And you, when you go out and look for something, you will find it. How about changing what you're looking for? Instead of looking for a bunch of dumb kids that can't do it, how about we say, you know, 150 years ago, kids could do it. And they had fewer resources than we have. Many of the parents couldn't read. Well, did you read to your kids? Abraham Lincoln's parents didn't read to him. His dad kept telling him, because he was illiterate, you're not going to read. You're not going to read. Well, that sounds like an abusive parent to me. Sure, we should take him away. Abraham Lincoln walked through that crucible and became an attorney and the president.
So you're advocating for kids not reading now. This is unbelievable, this guy.
It's incredible.
It's unbelievable. The only thing that's interesting to me about the story, because I have not heard the full... I'd like to hear what the case is from the school.
Right.
And I'd like to hear that, because usually there's usually one of two things that happens in these cases. Either one, there's an ideological divide.
Which there is here, right? Because he's got ADD. Get him out of my classroom or medicate him.
There's an ideological divide. They want the medication. He doesn't want to do it.
Right.
And so they don't like the style of parenting, so they're cracking down on that. And then the other part of it is there's usually a personal divide in that they don't like him for some reason.
Well,
that's why I asked that question.
Quite honestly.
Because it explains a lot if they see him as a nuisance and then they give him a hard time.
Put yourself in the issues. You're a teacher and you're teaching these 7-year-olds, and this one 7-year-old is disrupting the entire class. And you are just doing your best to hold the class together, but you can't even teach the class because he's disrupting.
Sure.
And you go and you ask the principal, I need help. Can we counsel with the family? Look, he's ADD. He needs medication. The teacher is trapped. The teacher has no place to go. She can't adapt. The school's not going to support her on adapting to ADHD and parents who say no to medication.
Right.
She's got to carry everything on. So she's looking at these parents like, you're making my life miserable. You're affecting all of the other kids. Your kid is not worth the price of all the education of all the other kids. So she is looking at them. And I'm not saying in a bad way that she's an evil, mean person at all.
Right.
She could have the best of intentions.
But that would explain irrational activity by the school. And you have to look for the source of why they would act so crazy. If you just say, wow, they're acting crazy and we oppose it. That obviously is you want to oppose it, but you don't need it. If you don't understand why the irrational activity is happening, you wonder if it is irrational, right? Is there something more to it that they would say is at stake here? And my guess is the answer to that is no. We've seen a lot of these stories, but until we know the answer to that, you don't know the whole story. And
so remember,
we'll continue
Justina,
to follow up on it.
Remember Justina Pelletier?
Mm-hmm.
She is back home. She's never recovered. In case you happen
still
to follow
in the wheelchair.
Back. Steel in a wheelchair, has not recovered from
any
of that.
She was taken by
Boston
Children's Hospital.
And then the Department of Family Services up in Massachusetts got involved.
And it was a long time before her parents got her back.
Yeah, and she just disintegrated
in their hospital.
What, 2 years or a year and a half, something like
long
that?
Long time, yeah.
And just disintegrated. And she's never really recovered. She's still in a wheelchair, but she is back home. 12 congressmen tried to pass Justina's law to get a control on CPS and Department of Children and Family Services. It went to committee and then just died. But it is something that really...
CPS has way too much power.
Yeah. Here's a medical professional, Ann in Virginia. Go ahead. Ann.
Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. I work with CPS. I'm a healthcare professional. I work in child abuse, so I see abused kids all the time. I want you to know that CPS has far more power in the schools than that dad knows. CPS, when a parent does not give permission to interview a child, CPS can go into the school and do it without the parent's permission and knowledge.
Wow.
I do not live in Ohio. In fact, I'm in the Intermountain West, not Virginia. But it's kind of astonishing. Counselors and CPS are very well connected at the schools, and the counselors are in all of the schools. Mm-hmm. They will interview your child. Now, I do want to say, for suicidal ideation, which is what that child disclosed to the counselor, that is a correct question to ask. When a child says, I want to erase myself from the planet, they do need to say, well, have you made a plan? Because if they've made a plan, then they need to be followed up with. Because
well, but isn't that a different question? Have you made a plan to how would you do that?
You can ask it either way. I always say, have you made a plan to hurt yourself?
Yeah, I think that's a wildly different question, especially to a seven-year-old.
And you don't want to ask a leading question to a child. Mm-hmm. Fit training, we're trained to ask questions that are not leading, so we don't implant questions into children's minds. If a counselor's doing that, that's a problem.
Thank you for your call.
If a child answers, I'm going to stab myself in the eye, isn't that a pretty good indication that's probably not what they're really going to do?
Right. It's
kind of a ridiculous. If you're going to kill yourself, stabbing yourself in the eye is not the way to go.
Glenn's right, though. It's a different question. How would you do that, and have you made a plan?
That's totally different.
And
to a seven-year-old.
And I will say slightly here in the defense of whatever counselor this is, if the kid says they're going to stab themselves in the eye, even if you did maybe lead them to that answer, and you don't do anything, and then the kid commits suicide?
No. That's why you call the parents.
But you have to let the parents handle.
Anybody who has had a 7 and 10 and 13-year-old boy knows. They say crazy things.
Of course.
You know, you're like, hey, son, what do you think about that? I just want to take and stab these scissors into his nose. Okay. Yes, Dad, I do. I mean,
My kids never said anything but well thought out, reasonable things.
On the other side of that, Jeffy's 113 years old and says crazy things all the time.
Let's go to Paul in Oklahoma. Hello, Paul. You're on the Glenn Beck program.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I think that people need to understand that the CPS needs to be reined in. There needs to be some sort of accountability there. They are really a primary tool for keeping people that are generally thought of as nonconformist in line with conformity. And the doctors, the powers that are out there, schools, authorities, if they think that you're out of line, that's a threat that's held over the head of conservative parents. Here's what I'm concerned about, Paul.
People who have a lot of kids, this family had six kids, they're immediately nonconformist. They're immediately, society looks at people with a lot of kids and go, there's something wrong with that family.
Tell me about it. I have 10 children. I homeschool every one of them. We were watching Columbine on the news when we were first pregnant. And we decided that it was our responsibility to take care of our children. And so we took it very seriously. We've always had an at-home parent, and we've always taken this very seriously. And we watch over our children very carefully. We had a run-in with CPS, actually, ourselves. My daughter had a sore hip, and we took her to our physician. They took an x-ray, and he said, we'll let you know if we find something. I got a phone call a little bit later from a hospital that I didn't know about, and they said, you need to come down here right now for surgery. And I said, we haven't heard anything from the doctor, and I don't know who you are. And I'm going over to the doctor, and I'm going to talk to him and get the x-rays. And they said, well, she needs to come down here for surgery. And if you're going to get the x-rays, can you bring them? Because we haven't seen them yet.
What?
Yeah, exactly. Wow. That's what I said. I said, excuse me? I said, you want to do a hip surgery on my daughter, and you haven't seen the x-rays. I said, you guys sound like you're not. I need to get a second opinion. And they said, if you don't bring her down here, we're going to call the CPS. And they called the CPS on us. They were there at our house in 2 hours. They escorted us to the hospital north of us, which wasn't the same place. And I was actually kept there by police.
Wow.
while they got another set of x-rays.
Paul,
that doctor came out and said, what am I looking for? I don't see anything.
Paul, thank you so much for your phone call. Please find out what you can do in your own city and your own state with the child services, because they are out of control all around the country.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
You're listening to
There's
the Glenn
so
Beck Program.
So much to talk about. We have the ex-KGB guy coming in. North Korea is making threats this weekend. And today on the Pat and Stu Show, how many peeps can Jeffy eat in a two-hour period? I say 200. Jeffy says, no way. You are a disgrace to fat people. You really are. If you can't eat 200 peeps, I don't ever want to hear about you being fat or ambitious, because you're
not ambitious. That was never a question.
When it comes to food, he is ambitious. You see him grazing all the time. You don't get to be that weight without trying.
That's a good point.
Try a little harder. 200 peeps. I got my money on 200 peeps in 2 hours.
Glenn Beck.
Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
I'm so excited to introduce you to a man. He is, the name of his book is Deep Undercover, and he was Deep Undercover. He is, if you've ever watched the show The Americans, he's the real life deal. Back in the 80s, he was a KGB spy, led an incredible life. Back home in Russia, then here as a spy, then saw the end of the Berlin Wall, kind of got a signal from back home, you got to come back in. He ran from both the FBI and the KGB. His life finally caught up to him in 1997. We have an hour with him tonight on television, an hour right now with radio, and I don't think it's going to be enough to be able to cover current events, his perspective on Putin, on Russia, what they're doing, should we trust, should we not trust, and just his amazing life deep undercover. His name is Jack Barsky, and we begin with him right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Jack, it is a thrill to meet you. Just
the
a thrill
is mine.
So you have been living in the United States since when?
Since 1978.
Okay. And you were an undercover. You were sent here to the United States to pose as an American.
Correct.
And you worked in what industry? Because you're a chemist.
I studied chemistry, but I never used any of that. You know, I taught chemistry and math for about a year as an assistant professor in Germany, and then I, you know, signed with the KGB, and my chemistry knowledge is completely gone. I never used it.
Yeah, and you came here to do what?
Well, to pretty much help destroy the United States. Didn't quite work that way. Right.
Yeah. And I want to come back to this. I'm so glad we have 2 hours. Let me jump ahead a bit to 1988. You're walking down into the subway and you see on the handle a splash of red paint.
Yeah, there was a predefined signal spot that was on my way to work, which I found and described to my the center, where they could put a signal. And that day, it was a gray, dank December morning. You know, I'm going off to work, half asleep, and there's that red dot the size of a fist. That was a clear signal. It was a dangerous signal. This was the most urgent signal that I could have ever read, and that meant get out.
Meant they're on to you.
That meant get out. It's an emergency. Don't ask any questions. Just go any. Don't go any place else. Go get your reserve documents, and make a beeline to Canada. And from there, we'll take you home. That was the plan.
And you have to worry that they would. They hope they don't unrelated paint the wall red. Because right.
it wasn't the wall. It was one of those, this is an elevated subway and supporting beams, steel beams.
Okay. So when you saw that, your heart
you must... Did. You're good material for working in that field.
Your heart must have leapt into your throat.
That's a question that I get a lot for certain situations that I was in. And actually, never happened like that. You know, what overcame me in situations like that, similar to when I first entered the country, a certain psychological numbness. All right, I became sort of a robot. And at that point, the robot made a decision, I'm not doing it, and I went on to work. And the funny thing is, nobody noticed. Nobody noticed that something was wrong with me. Neither my wife at home nor the colleagues. And it was for 3 months afterwards when I was like, and I had some concern that somebody might be after me. Nobody ever noticed. So it's what I call numbness. I can't
explain
it.
Did the KGB then contact you and like, dude?
Yes.
I doubt they said that. But
The dude thing happened. Yeah. And this is one of those moments that I can relive in my memory. So I'm standing on the subway platform, very close to where the first car would come in. And there were about a couple of dozen people on the platform. It was still, it was another morning, early morning. And this figure comes from the right in a dark coat and pretty short guy. And he whispered, so it would be audible only to me, that you got to come home or else you're dead. That was another moment where numbness overcame me.
What'd you say?
Nothing. He walked away. That was it.
Oh,
there was no conversation.
You didn't push him in front of the subway or anything?
was the threat that they were going to kill you, the KGB, or was...
Well,
think
about, this was spoken with a pretty heavy accent, so this could have easily also been sort of, dead meaning that your cover is blown, right?
Mm.
You're dead. So you can interpret it either way. I had to take seriously the real threat, because even then I knew that the KGB was coming after folks, after defectors. However, I've been told by somebody who should know, I met him about 6 weeks ago, Mr. Oleg Kalugin, who was the head of counterintelligence for the KGB. He now lives in the United States, mm-hmm. and he stated that killed anybody on the United States territory. So take it for what it is. We will never know.
I believe that. But do you ever watch the TV show? I don't want to get into this, but do you ever watch the TV show The Americans?
I do, because I'm friends with the producers now.
I bet.
Right. Yeah. I was wondering if you consulted or if you thought that was pretty...
No. They should have me as a consultant, because I was on the set and I found a bunch of things that were... They're very much focused on being authentic.
Oh yeah.
And they're going to great lengths to find the right cars, the right buses, and
it's quite amazing.
And the decorations in their on the set, but I found a few things that were wrong just by.
Yeah.
But it's a very entertaining show. But with regard to intelligence work, they know it. It's all nonsense.
Huh. So
this is not a way to get hired. You realize this?
So
they know it. They know it. It's entertainment.
Yeah, it's got to be a show.
But let me tell you one thing. What they are doing really well is how they cover the psychology of being undercover. There was a possibility at one point that I would actually that they would have sent me to the U.S. with a wife. As you may know,
they arranged a wife for you in Germany, right?
No, they didn't arrange it. They allowed me to get married to the one that I fell in love with. They screened her, and she was quote unquote clean. And there was some thought of actually sending her over here with me, but
knowingly, her knowingly being involved.
Except she psychologically, she was not capable of handling that kind of pressure, so they kept us separate. But anyway, getting back to the Americans, this is the best part of their show, is how those folks deal with
the situation,
being in another country, becoming another person, and God forbid now you have children. And I think one of my favorite episodes is when the kid is bringing the pastor to dinner.
Yeah, yeah, because you grew up that way. As I read your book and as I know your story, you know, you grew up, and in the Americans, they keep going back to what their life was like back in Russia. And a couple thoughts come up on, like, why wouldn't you come here and just see the plenty and go, man, I'm on the wrong side? You grew up in a time in Germany when it was being rebuilt, and the underwear that you wore for a long time was actually parachute silk, right?
Yeah, because there wasn't much of anything that could be bought, and so you had to really you had to scramble. But you know, when you're talking about the Americans and going back to where you came from, ideology as it's fed to you from childhood on is a very, very strong foundation.
Because that's what happened to you, just like in the Americans.
That's exactly
your
right.
Your family said Christianity is fairy tale and...
That's right. I mean, not the family, the entire society, the school system, the teachers, the friends, everybody. Christianity wasn't even mentioned. I mean, we had Christmas and there was no Christ in Christmas. I opened the Bible once and... because I found one and I read it from Genesis chapter 1, you know, that's not how you should read the Bible as a child, right?
Right.
But the bottom line is, so people ask me that question all the time. So when you came over here and you saw all this wealth, didn't that make you waver? Not at all. As I said, that applies to any kind of ideology. If you're being fed... a certain belief system from childhood on, it is very difficult to overcome. And as a matter of fact, I have some good friends back in Germany with whom I reconnected. They got screwed over by East Germany one way or the other, and they're still communists. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to shed what you're being fed.
Living here, though, did you eventually gain some... sympathy toward America?
Yeah, when did
you
that
fall in love with America?
Pivot happen with you? Why did you decide when you saw that red dot, I'm not leaving?
Well, that was not because of the country. That was because of Chelsea, my daughter, who is now 29 years old. She was 18 at the time. And that was for the first time. And, you know, I don't want to go back. My book is to actually... If I have to describe it in very few words, it's a love story.
Mm-hmm.
It's about love denied, love not being able to love the right way.
And having two families and being torn apart. You had one in Germany and one here.
Right. So, but in this situation, this was the first time that I felt the pull of unconditional love. And I bet you guys know that. That is stronger than anything else.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it sounds like trite. Love conquers all, but this one did.
In the Americans, you see that, what's it called? Control? Not control. What's the
center? Yeah.
The
control.
I know. That's get smart. The center gets
which
realistic.
Which was really accurate.
Yes. Right.
Unlike the Americans.
Right.
Getting
right.
smart center, was totally accurate.
The center starts to get concerned because of the kids. They know now that the kids and the kids are becoming American and... it's not easy to rip them back to Russia, and they're starting to think and know that that could change the agents.
But there's also this other train of thought, which was actually real, not as far as I'm concerned, but I've heard folks talk about it, to, you know, create a second generation of undercover agents that are even more deeply buried, that could one day become the Manchurian candidate, right?
Yeah, right.
Those dreams were dreamed by certain KGB folks.
Do you think it happened?
We had that in Barack Obama.
All right, we have so much to talk to you about. We want to talk a little bit about the world, what's happening, Syria, Russia, North Korea. You understand communism and what the mindset is. I would imagine you can kind of transpose some of the mindset from the former Soviet Union and Iron Curtain to North Korea and what the people have been taught. And why this is something the West can't understand, getting into a war with North Korea. It's not like you walk in and they throw flowers at your feet. It's a very different world. The name of the book is Deep Undercover, Jack Barsky, My Secret Life and Tangled Allegiances as a KGB Spy in America. Well worth the read. And we want to get to that day. I think it was in 97 when you were driving down the highway and the FBI stopped you and you knew my life has finally caught up to me. They know. We'll get to that and the news of the day coming up in just a second.
Glenn Beck.
Mercury.
888-727-BACK.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
The changes. Jack Barsky, former KGB agent living undercover here in the United States since the 70s. The changes you have seen in this country, we are becoming an authoritarian state quickly.
Yeah, I'm concerned with that. And, you know, it started out when, you know, I had children here and I have another child now. And you had this segment on this morning about the state taking away a child from their parents, who, in my view, didn't do anything wrong. I have a six-year-old who is, quote-unquote, crazy. She could easily be diagnosed with ADHD. We're not going down that path, you know, and I have her in private school, so the state...
So how do you... I mean, you're looking at this. Does it sometimes... I've talked to a lot of people that came from behind the Iron Curtain and then got out and came here, and... they all have this look of horror on their face because they've seen it before. Yeah. And they're like, you guys don't understand what is coming your way. Do you feel that way?
Sure, exactly. We were owned by the state. You know, I was lucky because I was really, really good academically. So I became a golden child. But the majority of us were told where to go, how long to study, and after that, what kind of a job you to take. Even if you graduated from college, they would tell you where to go. The state owned you fundamentally. The horror that I'm living with right now is that right now in the United States, there are more rules and laws about parents and how they should treat their children than I've ever experienced in the old communist East Germany.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
What a statement that is. That's incredible.
Oh, my gosh.
But that's a fact. Mm. I mean, you know, if you have a two-year-old on a tricycle in your driveway and she doesn't have a helmet on and your neighbor reports on you, you get in trouble.
Right.
You get in trouble. And it's the state authorities, it depends on the state, really. In the Northeast, it's stronger than the South.
Yeah.
They can just reach into your family and...
destroy it.
Away your children. Now, I have one slight disagreement with your statement. Parents don't own their children. God owns the children.
Yes,
parents
you're right.
are caretakers.
Yes, yes, you're right. You're right.
And the state cannot take the child away from God. And,
yes.
And that's a huge concern. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's reversible at this point.
That is amazing. And I want to hear about this in a minute. But you grew up atheist. Christianity's a fairy tale. You started listening via radio to Ravi Zacharias.
That's correct. And I get to meet him next week in person.
You haven't met him yet?
No.
Oh, you're going to love him.
I will meet him.
So does smart. He know? Does he?
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
He's been reading my book. So it's just like, you know, I'm so excited because this man brought me... You know, he pretty much took the scales off of my eyes because, you know, up until that point, I always thought that faith, and in this case, Christian faith, is for the dim-witted and the folks who can't take care of themselves. This is what we were taught. And here's this brilliant man explaining how it would be really stupid not to believe in Christ.
Yeah, he's an amazing man. You're going to love him. More with Jack Barsky coming up in just a second. Stand by.
So what was that?
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Jack Barsky is with us. He is the author of a great book, Deep Undercover, My Secret Life and Tangled Allegiances as a KGB Spy in America. He came here in the 1970s. He kind of shook the agency a bit during the Reagan administration. We have so much to talk about. His view of America, his life is, I mean, you could write a book, and he did. Truly, truly fascinating. 5 o'clock this afternoon on the Blaze TV, we're going to spend another hour with him and get into some other topics with him. But let me spend a few minutes on just the news of the day. I know you don't know him, but ruthless KGB, I would describe him as ruthless KGB agent and now oligarch, Vladimir Putin. Your thoughts about him?
Well, as you said, I don't know him. I don't know about him. But you can take, you can apply some logic here. And clearly, the KGB in my time was the organization in the entire country that were able to pull the best. You know, they the very best, and particularly folks who were foreign intelligence. I mean, these were plum jobs. So they pulled the best and brightest from the universities. In those days, you could not apply for the KGB. They would recruit you. The CIA, you can actually, FBI, you can apply. So what you had when the Soviet Union started falling apart, people were scrambling to figure out what to do next, right? And so when the goodies were distributed, when this became sort of, you know, the wealth of the state was distributed, who was closest to where the decisions were made? KGB. So now some of them became oligarchs and
some of them became dead.
Some of them became dead. but there was a good reason why they became dead, because they were they were fighting somebody who had more power. So now if you rise to the top with that kind of competition, you have to be really good at this. And this is as hardcore politics as you can think about. And one needs to take Mr. Putin very, very seriously, to think of him like, because he does some of these antics of, riding on a horse with no shirt on.
Yeah.
There's a good reason for all of that. He plays the Russian populace very, very well.
Are you surprised that so many Americans have switched sides on Putin, where the left has always loved, Russia and Moscow and everything else? Now the left is against Putin, and many on the right are saying, Putin's our friend, Russia's our friend.
Well, I think both sides are wrong here. And I think when we're using, what's happening here with this whole idea that, Putin and Trump were in cahoots to influence the election, I think that's a canard, and it is not helping. What we have here now, we're making policy subject to politics. That's very dangerous. We're throwing bombs at each other, losing focus on who is the adversary. I mean, as much as we might disagree with the Democrats, but they're not enemy.
Mm-hmm.
They're internal adversaries.
I agree.
So this whole discussion, this back and forth, is not helping. And there are certain media that can't let go, even though now it's pretty clear that, Trump and Putin are not best friends. Right?
Yeah.
They won't let go. Even this morning, I saw it on CNN. They just keep on digging. There's nothing there.
But it's not what we have found, I think, isn't unusual, that big, important people were approached, not with their knowledge, were approached by KGB agents. That's what you did.
That's what people like you did.
Oh, sure.
Not that doesn't say anything about the American. It says, of course they're targeting you.
Of course. And if you if you're a business person and you do business with a major Russian corporation, you are doing business with somebody who is there because Mr. Putin allows them to be there.
Yeah.
And are they infiltrated by their secret by their intelligence services? Of course they are. I mean, just to, that's just a fact of life. And you know, there's no guilt on the American side.
People don't understand North Korea, and they don't understand that. You know, we have this silly idea that wherever we go, we're going to be welcomed and people are going to throw flowers at our feet. And it's going to be like Paris, 1945.
Or like it was in Iraq, right?
Yeah, or like it was in Iraq. North Korea, I've just talked to somebody who left very high up of the CIA. And he said to me, Glenn, we're out of options with North Korea. We believe he believes that he can defeat the United States or the West. He believes he can do it. His people hate the West and the United States, so they're all with him, you know. What do we do? First, explain the mentality of somebody who's living behind an iron curtain like those in North Korea.
As I may have mentioned before, is the ideology that is implanted in you at a young age sticks with you and for a long time, even when you're exposed to contrary opinions and thought.
How do you get, you know, he has concentration camps where if you betray him, it's not you that's punished. It's you and three generations of your family.
And they deserve it. And it's just, you know.
And that's the way you think.
Yes, that's the thinking. And you know, it's the same, very similar to what happened to Germans, a highly educated nation that went with Hitler because there was rationalization going on. And, you know, and yes, you cannot think that once you free them from that dictator that the country is going to change. As a matter of fact, I have a urologist who is from South Korea, and he told me that because we were talking about, you know, the parallels between, you know, the divided countries, and he said if there were a unification now, he said the people in the North could not function in a free society. They don't know how to operate.
I don't think you could ever free China. I mean, I don't think, you know, what's self-evident to us that man should be free. I think you go to a rice paddy in China, they wouldn't find that self-evident.
That's right. And we're getting to some of that in this country where, you know, I just was reminded way back when I heard the term sheeple.
Yeah.
There's a significant section of the population right now in the United States that behave like sheeple. They want to be told what to do, where to go, they want to be fed, want to get their phone, want to get their internet, but they really don't want to participate.
No, they want to be in their safe space.
Yes. Oh, that too, of course.
Well, was there a time that you thought, like Christianity, where you thought, wow, I get this. I like this. I see what the... I may not see what... We're not doing it necessarily, but I see what the American founders were trying to do.
That took a long time, and it was certainly... See, when I quote-unquote resigned from the KGB, as I said, it was for personal reasons. It was for reasons of because I loved my child. And at that point, I withdrew from quote-unquote the world stage. I didn't want to have any part of this anymore. I just wanted to live my life out in privacy, you know, house in the country, and don't bother me with anything else. But you know, life creeps back into... you just can't stop living. And as... Particularly as the internet made information more accessible, I started digging into the past of my old country, East Germany, and what I found was pretty atrocious. And then most recently, I started digging into the history of the KGB, and that was even worse. So you know, fast forward, now I'm studying the United States and, you know, the history of the United States. I'm currently reading a book by Eric Metaxas, If You Can Keep It.
Oh, yeah.
Great book.
Yeah, great man.
And you know, and emotionally, intellectually, I'm right there. I'm with the founding fathers, and that makes me even more sad because the comparison to what
Where we
had
yeah.
and what functioned for mm-hmm. so many years with what we have now is not, this is not a good one.
You came over here in 1978, so you were here with Jimmy Carter. What were your thoughts of Jimmy Carter and then of Ronald Reagan?
Well, they were collective thoughts, you know, the KGB, my handlers, myself. We really didn't like Mr. Carter because of his, you know, the pinpricks that he applied to us with his human rights policy. He encouraged the dissidents, you know, but he was a nuisance. Mm-hmm. But Ronald Reagan was a threat. That was it. That was completely different. Mm-hmm. People were scared of Ronald Reagan, partially because they misinterpreted some of his religious quotes. And at one point, I heard that that somebody in back in Moscow told me that Mr. Reagan might actually want to accelerate the end times, so mm-hmm. to speak.
When you heard him say, "The Soviets are an evil empire," what did you feel?
That's the first time I got this question. Mild disagreement at that point.
Disagreement.
I certainly did not believe at that time. Hmm. And that was in the late 80s that Russia was evil. I had no knowledge, no information to agree with that statement. But it didn't bother me that much either.
Wow. What did you think when he stood and said, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall"?
I don't even know if I don't remember any response or reaction to it.
Do you remember how you felt when they tore the wall down?
Yes, I remember where I was when I saw it. I was in the living room in my apartment in Ozone Park, Queens, and I was watching this on TV, and that was after my resignation, and I was watching it like an outsider. It didn't bother me. It didn't excite me because I knew that I wouldn't ever go back there. So I had sort of like shut this part of me down.
Wow.
I'd like to know what kind of intelligence did you provide to the Soviet Union while you worked here? Because you worked for an American company, right? Mm-hmm. A large company.
Yeah.
You're in the Pan Am building?
At the time it was, they were on 1 Madison Avenue, okay. The MetLife building.
Yeah, MetLife. Yeah.
And did you do corporate espionage? What kinds of things did you supply?
I was trained to do political intelligence exclusively. And I, to the extent I understand this, the business type intelligence, this espionage was run out of a different department of the KGB. It was only The last time I was in Moscow, after having been here for 8 years, that I was approached by somebody. I was introduced by my handler, by my liaison, to a new person. And this person had a completely different take on things. He said, he told me it was, during the Afghan war. He told me that, and this is a sort of a quote from memory, "We are really hurting. This country is not doing very well economically. We need as much as stuff we can get from the West. So since you're in information technology, whatever you can get us, hardware, software."
He meant hard drives and of that.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not for spying, just to keep you running.
It was open-ended, though. There was no specific list of, like, can you get this, 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 and this. Obviously,
you just said get whatever you can.
Yes. And so I did have access to some software that that you couldn't buy. It was on the can't sell to the Soviet Union list. So what I did tell them, and where they didn't bite in hindsight, it's really interesting, and it shows me that they were like very much behind in their thinking. I had access to the records of about 10 million Americans, and they didn't want that information.
Wow.
They wouldn't have had a way to sort it and to do metadata.
They didn't understand the value of data.
Yeah.
And in many respects...
That's surprising to me.
Yeah, but it's in the book. In many respects, in the KGB, there was a backward kind of thinking going back to the
early 50s. I guess we're fortunate in that way, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
To the early 50s, what worked then?
Wow. Yeah.
And this whole thing about, you know, being on the other side of the firing line. And
It's kind of like the America, the way America is thinking now. We're going kind of backwards instead of forwards. Jack Barsky, the name of the book is Deep Undercover.
Really,
he's going to be joining me for an hour tonight on television. You don't want to miss that.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I cannot wait to finish this conversation with Jack Barsky. By the way, he's going to be on Facebook Live with our former military intelligence guy. That's going to be a wild conversation.
So good.
And then Jack's going to join me at 5 on the Blaze TV. Check it all out, glennbeck.com, blaze.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.